Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines. Brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
Hey, before we get into headlines, Seth, what did you think of Ross's take on Josh McCown? Super bullish on him as a head coach. Also, super anti him being a head coach right now. I think it lines up with kind of some of the things you've been saying.
Well, he said it was insulting to coaches, and I think it is. The concern I would have if the Texans hired Josh McCown was that it would start to look like a pattern of the Texans maybe underestimating just how hard it is to be a head coach. Like, I think they, Culley, for whatever they were looking for with David Culley, I think they were genuinely surprised that he was as inept at some of the things. And the other thing about, I think that if they were to hire Josh McCown, it's not just insulting to NFL coaches, it's insulting to coaches everywhere. Because it is a gut punch of a profession that you have to be obsessed with to actually thrive in it. And you have to just feel driven to do it. Josh McCown interviewed for the head job last year, and then to prepare for another opportunity, he didn't full-time coach for a year. Like, he wasn't a full-time coach. He's never been a full-time coach. He had a year in which he could do it, and he chose not to do it. I don't care at what level he would have done it. Just do it. And so, you can't hire a guy that's not taking it that seriously. It's almost like a sense of entitlement or something that he's interviewing for these jobs that he somehow must think he's so special because everybody tells him such great things about himself. They're like, oh, yeah, I could totally step into that without ever having actually been a full-time coach at any level for any amount of time. Yeah, it's insulting.
Yep. Headlines, Aaron Rodgers. Does the Packers leadership want him back? It sure appears that they do. Matt LaFleur knows how he got his regular season record to be, boy, what is he, over the 3 years, 40 and 9? 13-3, 3 years in a row for Matt LaFleur. Well, 14-3 this year, I guess. Here's Matt LaFleur on Aaron Rodgers coming back to the Packers, possibly.
Certainly, we want him back here. I think we'd be crazy not to want him back here. He's going to be the two-time MVP. I mean, this guy does so much for a football team. Not only what you guys see on Sundays or every game day, but what he does in that locker room, how he leads. I know what he puts into this thing. And certainly I'm extremely disappointed in that we couldn't get over the hump for not only him, but for everybody in that locker room.
All right, so that was Matt LaFleur. Matt LaFleur knows, you know what? I look a lot smarter coaching Aaron Rodgers than I would coaching Jordan Love.
Yeah, and I think that the one thing that hasn't really made headlines, because obviously, and we did this yesterday, Aaron Rodgers in the press conference afterwards, when asked the question about it, talked about, okay, when he would be making his decision and all that stuff. It wasn't the Aaron Rodgers from 6 months ago who was, you know, just forcefully putting stuff out there about how much he disliked management. In the press conference, he did talk pretty extensively about how, you know, they've made progress in the relationship between him and Brian Gutekunst, the GM, that he feels like he's being listened to. I think that enough of the raw nerves have been calmed down that he probably is starting to feel like, okay, the grass is not always greener elsewhere, and that we've got a pretty good thing going here. I know the Packers have a cap situation that they can remedy as long as they know that Aaron Rodgers is on board. But I would say there's a much better than 50% chance that Aaron Rodgers stays in Green Bay.
Yeah, that's the reconciliation for the Green Bay Packers, a team that, just in terms of how they've managed personnel through the years, it's always been a team that's been built through the draft, not crazy stuff in free agency. But they've had two Hall of Fame quarterbacks over the last 30 years that have allowed them to do that. Well, they're not in that place now. Like, they have spent money on guys. They are $45 million over the cap. They've got to come to the realization, Seth, or the reconciliation, that they're going to be the New Orleans Saints of the NFC North, which is, okay, we're going to have a lot of guys with voidable years. We're going to be spending a lot of credit card money. And someday, kind of like the Saints are going through right now with Drew Brees now gone, someday we're going to have to live through... We're going to have to live through a period of time where we're just dealing with all this money we've shoved into the future. We're going to have to reconcile it at some point.
And I think the difference is between the difference between the Saints and the Packers, at least in theory, would be that Drew Brees was showing signs of physical limitations or physical degradation for quite a few years.
Yeah.
And the Saints kind of had to engineer their team building around that. You know, they didn't bother with receivers that could get open deep. They wanted guys like Michael Thomas who could get open really quickly underneath so Drew Brees didn't have to try to push the ball downfield aggressively. I think with the Packers, Rodgers is still very, very physically capable and not far off from whenever his peak was. Maybe he's still in the middle of his peak. So I don't think that they have to worry about engineering their football team a certain way like they did with Drew Brees, which makes it a little bit easier to work with those financial constraints.
Yeah. Did you know that I brought up these odds before when we were talking about Tom Brady? Tom Brady, it's an overwhelming favorite that despite what Brady has been saying on his, what he said on his podcast yesterday. Ben, why don't we grab that in just a second here? We'll play that for you. Brady is still an overwhelming favorite to be the starting quarterback for the Buccaneers in week one of 2022. While Aaron Rodgers, just the odds makers here. So we'll see. If you think he's back with the Packers next year, there's value. Plus 160. So it's the underdog right now that Aaron Rodgers is going to be on the Green Bay Packers in week one of 2022. You bet 100, you can win 160.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I know where my next $100 is going. Yeah. So
I'm surprised by that.
I think that there's a difference between Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. The biggest one is that Aaron Rodgers specifically, just 6 months ago, redid his deal in such a way that he could force his way off the team this year. With Brady, he's either retiring or playing for the Bucs.
Yes.
With Rodgers, there's more potential different scenarios, including like any number of NFL teams that he could be playing with. I guess perhaps retirement, but I don't think that's actually realistic.
No, I don't either.
I think with Rodgers, there's just way more actual smoke. All the smoke about Brady right now could have been said at any point in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I think it's all, I keep seeing the same stuff that I saw at any given point about how he's getting old or Giselle doesn't like watching him get hit or he's got kids at home. Like, yeah, he's addressed all that stuff before and still come back.
Here's the most recent version of that. This is his Let's Go podcast he does with Jim Gray and Larry Fitzgerald. This is Brady yesterday on that podcast. What's different now maybe than in years past?
The biggest difference now that I'm older is I have kids now too, you know, and I care about them a lot as well. And, you know, they've been my biggest supporters. My wife is my biggest supporter. You know, it pains her to see me get hit out there. And, you know, she deserves what she needs from me as a husband. My kids deserve what they need from me as a dad. And, you know, I'm going to spend some time with them and give them what they need because they've really been giving me what I need the last 6 months to do what I love to do. And, you know, I said this a few years ago, it's what relationships are all about. It's not always what I want. It's what we want as a family. And, you know, I'm going to spend a lot of time with them and then, you know, figure out in the future what's next.
Seth, you're not buying it.
Well, you said something really good earlier when we were discussing this, and it was that when it comes to the kids, I was making some complex point about quality time versus quantity of time, and you're like, you made the best point, which was, I'm guessing Tom Brady's kids think it's pretty cool that he's playing quarterback in the National Football League and that every other year they get to go to a Super Bowl, then go to a water parade and do all these things. So when he says it's a family decision, I think that Tom Brady is very good at compartmentalizing. I think when it was time to play football, he's playing football. Now he goes into the phase where they'll have a family vote on it. And, you know, yes, Giselle doesn't like watching Tom get hit, but she's largely been spared from anything truly catastrophic. So I don't think she probably doesn't like it, but she's not like deathly afraid of it. When it comes down to the family vote, I think it's going to be Giselle versus John Edward, Vivian, Lake, and Benjamin. So it's going to be a 5-1 vote that Tom keeps playing football.
How many kids does he have?
It looks like there's one named John Edward Thomas Moynihan. That's the one with Bridget Moynihan.
Okay.
And then there's Vivian Lake and Benjamin.
Okay.
So Vivian Lake is one person.
Gotcha. So three total.
Wait, so that's three. Oh, okay. Yeah, I got John Edward Thomas Moynihan kind of.
You were mashing up all these names. I'm like, what does he have, eight kids?
No, yeah. Yeah, he's got John Edward Thomas Moynihan, Vivian Lake, Brady, Benjamin Brady. What?
You sound like Goodwill Hunting. Jimmy Bobby Ray. Blah, 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 blah.
Well, it was, John Edward Thomas Moynihan.
Yeah.
And there's not even a Brady in that name either. How they give him four names and not even one of them is Brady?
It's crazy.
What the hell is that?
It's crazy.
I got to talk to Tom about this.
Yep. Or Bridget.
Bridget. Come on.
I got to talk to Bridget Moynihan.
Four names and you can't even squeeze a Brady in there?
You got Thomas in there. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2. An Odyssey station. Seth, yesterday, a little bit of baseball. Two things going on. Today is the announcement of the Hall of Fame class of 2022. We'll get to that in a second. Yesterday, the Players Association and the owners met in New York City to go over a counter offer from the player sides, and the players made a couple of concessions in the counter offer. And I'm not going to go too deep down the rabbit hole with this, but they made concessions on an age-based free agency system. The players had been looking for that free agency based partially on age because you get older players. George Springer, probably the one Astros fans can most relate to, didn't hit free agency until he was 31 years old because of the rules. They withdrew their request for that. They made some tweaks to revenue sharing. Just know that this battle is about money. The players want to make more. The owners want to keep more. That's what it's always about. This is, Seth, just a general question about the work stoppage right now, the lockout, which I don't know that people are feeling too acutely right now because it's not like pitchers and catchers are reporting this week. It's not like spring training starts in 2 weeks. Certainly
football
not like,
is soaking up a lot of attention.
Yes.
Those are some of the highest rated games ever.
Yes,
yeah.
There are plenty other lightning rods for attention in the sports world right now. And maybe we need to put this to the audience. Like, what's your sense on what people want as far as coverage of the lockout goes? Like, just broad strokes on occasion, deep dive, ignore it, tell me when it's over. What's your sense?
I think that people, without any big leaks about how well or badly it's going, because there have been little whispers here that the player, you know, the owners make an offer, the players reject it. Like, that's all just typical stuff. We haven't really seen any dire prognostication, and I think barring that, the one thing about baseball compared to football is that the owners and the players alike do a really good job of keeping things pretty in-house. It's not like football where you got dumbass players criticizing their union reps publicly, you know, showing fissures in the armor, and you've got owners kind of leaking information at times to their favorite journalists. Baseball keeps it pretty tight, so it's just there's not as much to talk about.
They do snipe publicly, but they do it through leadership.
In such a way that it just looks like classic posturing.
Yeah. Statement from the owners, statement from Tony Clark, the head of the union, that kind of thing, as opposed to such and such player, you know, throwing emojis and rap lyrics on Twitter or something like that. So that's where we are right now. The two sides are going back and forth. Players made a couple of concessions. Just so people know, the feeling is that the last two labor negotiations, the owners have gotten over on the players. So there's a real feeling that the players are going to try really hard to try to win some back of what they've lost the last couple times.
Baseball's got a reputation, you know. They're the best. They're the strongest union for the players in any of the sports.
Not lately.
They can't just sit there and keep taking it on the chin.
Yep.
That's how all of a sudden you become the NFLPA.
5 o'clock. Exactly. 5 o'clock today, the Hall of Fame class of 2022 gets announced. The feeling right now is the only current player on the ballot that is trending towards induction is David Ortiz, Big Poppy. Kurt Schilling was trending that way last year, but he basically told baseball to go pound sand because there were writers factoring in his political views and things like that. But Big Poppy looks like he's got a decent shot of getting in. Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds are the big story here, Seth. They are both in their 10th and final season in which they could get inducted through the Writers Association. As of right now, the ballots that have been revealed, because there are these polls that they run of writers who are willing to say who they voted for. Right now, both guys are trending right slightly above the 75% threshold that you need for induction. But the concern, if you're somebody who wants Clemens and Bonds in, which I am, the concern is that oftentimes the ballots that don't get revealed before the unveiling are guys who punish these guys for PEDs. Like every year Bonds and Clemens have trended about 10 or 12% above where they ultimately wind up when the total reveal comes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because and I think the thing about, I feel like there's been enough distance now between, I mean, it's been, how many years has it been, Sean? 25 years, really, since everything was exposed?
The Mitchell Report was 2003.
Oh, okay.
The Mitchell Report. Now, neither of these guys were in the Mitchell
19
Report.
Years, excuse me.
Yeah.
But before the Mitchell Report, though, too, it's been however long it's going since it was first. Remember how it all started? It's the craziest thing. Like, Mark McGwire and Androstene Dione.
In his locker.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was just nuts. I remember hearing about this stuff, Andro. And, you know, that ultimately ends up being not, like, ridiculously ineffective compared to actual anabolic steroids.
Yeah.
But, he just casually had it in his locker. That's how casual the approach was towards hormones and hormone precursors and all that stuff. Because Androstene Dione is a precursor to testosterone. So it's that those guys were so demonized for something that wasn't – it was one of those wink-wink things in baseball. And it wasn't the same level of demonization, I guess, that there would later be with it. So it doesn't mean that it was right or the right thing to do. But when it comes to, like, basically – for two guys in Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, who 100% would have been in the Hall of Fame based on anything they did before they ever, allegedly, in the case of Clemens, touched an illegal substance, that basically what you're doing is keeping them out solely because of some kind of a moral objection. And I just, it's hard to make that jibe with the various other characters that are in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Who just, you know, did
legitimately awful people. Yeah.
Not to mention just, you know, back when speed was very prevalent.
Yeah.
Or in various other drugs that were very prevalent before they became widespread or publicly known. It feels like there's been enough distance in time that those two guys would, and I'm not excusing the use of PEDs or anything like that. I just feel like you gotta weigh it all in balance.
Yeah.
And for me, it just weighs heavily in favor of those guys were Hall of Famers without the PEDs.
A-Rod is also on the ballot, Seth. This is his first time on the ballot.
Yeah.
He is trending at about 40% right now.
Yeah.
So he's someone who's actually a known PED user. Like, he was suspended for a full season for PEDs.
Yeah. The PR rehab that he's done so well with the fan base just by being in media hasn't necessarily worked on.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like 40% for his first time on the ballot, as unpopular as he was as a player, is actually pretty good. Like, Sammy Sosa, and look, A-Rod is light years better than Sammy Sosa. Like, Sammy Sosa's never been able to crack like 17%.
Yeah.
And the dude was hitting 60 home runs a season back in the day.
Yeah, Sosa and, I mean, because Sosa and McGwire are the ones that fall into that category of, like, okay, well, what were you really without the PEDs? What can we say? How special were you without that?
Yeah.
And you can, it doesn't help, too, that you can see the body transformation in those guys from Sosa. I mean, Barry got pretty yoked, but he was already a pretty thick and muscular guy.
Yeah.
Those, like, McGwire and Sammy Sosa went from bean poles to lumberjacks, you know?
Yeah, Barry's issue was his head. His melon got huge for some reason. Well, for some reason. We know the reason. But, like, his head got gigantic. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. So, yeah, that'll be, we'll see. Maybe a little bit of good Hall of Fame news. I say good Hall of Fame news. I mean, maybe some of you out there don't think Roger should get in. I think he should get in. I hope he gets in.
This is, like, just to let you know how stark it is, I'm just looking at the all-time war leaders, Sean.
Yeah.
Barry Bonds is fourth all-time war. And remember, they've added in the Negro Leagues here, too. So this is, like, it's even more impressive when you think about the number of people.
Yep.
Then Roger Clemens is eighth all-time in war.
Wow. What is Bonds again?
Fourth. Yeah. So this is for
the top eight players of all time by that metric.
For any youngsters that don't know it, WAR is wins above replacement. It's cumulative, so it kind of it's added up over time in your career. Babe Ruth is the all-time leader.
Yeah.
You know, Cy Young is third. So, but I'm going down and I'm looking at WAR. I mean, I'm going down. It's got the Hall of Fame cross right next to all of them. Let's see. I'm down to 35th at Phil Niekro. He's in the Hall of Fame. I'm down to George Brett at 48. He's in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. I mean, I can't find anybody. Oh, okay. So the next guy down after eighth all-time WAR leader, Roger Clemens, the next guy down who isn't in the Hall of Fame at number 64 is Pete Rose.
Okay.
Well, the next guy after that.
Yeah, keep going.
The next guy after that is Curt Schilling at 65.
You just said, I don't want your Hall of Fame.
That's a whole other argument, too. Like, yep. There's a lot of things about Curt Schilling I don't like, but yep. Man, this is a baseball award. But then, so after that, after you lose Curt Schilling, okay, Mike Trout's still active, obviously.
And he'll make the Hall of Fame, yeah.
Yeah, like, you don't, I mean, it's okay, 79th, Bill Dahlin. Yeah, Lou Whitaker, some of these guys after that, like Rafael Palmeiro. Like, it's not even close. Anybody anywhere in the vicinity of Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are 100% in the
yes.
Hall of Fame.
You were in the 70s for WAR.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
He's eighth. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Who do we credit or maybe blame for Josh McCown's candidacy as head coach of the Texans? That's next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
I love Josh McCown. That dude is awesome. I think he's got a chance to be a great head coach. I think it's pretty insulting to all the guys that have actually, former players or whoever, that have been coaching for years, to think a guy that hasn't coached at all other than high school could just be an NFL head coach. I think it's insulting the other guys that have put the time in, and I love Josh. And my other read on it is that the powers that be in Houston probably think he's a guy that they could have a lot of influence and control over, because he doesn't really know how it's done because he's never done it before.
That's interesting. That was Ross Tucker, who joined us earlier in the program talking about Josh McCown. That last part we didn't really dig into, Seth. The part where I think outsiders looking in at this job go, okay, it seems like there's just a lot more hair on this job than there is other head coaching jobs, where, you know, just questions about, okay, what is Nick Caserio's involvement on game day going to be? What is Jack Easterby's role behind the scenes? what role is this head coach going to have in choosing his staff? Because the last head coach walked into the staff that was there. What if they want to keep Lovie Smith and this head coach has his own defensive coordinator? All these things. All these things that don't seem to be questions around these other jobs. Like, for example, Jonathan Gannon is reported to be somebody who crushed his interview with the Texans, could be a front runner for the job. They want to get him for a second interview, according to some reports. He's also in line for the Vikings job. He impressed the Vikings as well. Well, the Vikings, they are looking for a general manager right now, but in terms of the head coaching job itself, hey, you're walking in there and the roster is kind of ready-made. You got some Pro Bowl players on the team. You got an established quarterback. And, you know, presumably you're going to get to choose your staff. There's no Jack Easterby in the building. The GM that they hire is probably somebody who sits in the press box or in the owner's box with a suit. That feels a lot more like the other 31 jobs around the league, aside from the Texans. I think that last part Ross brought up is something that kind of concerns me a little bit. Are they limiting the pool of candidates that are willing to even interview for the job because they don't want to walk into a dynamic that isn't what they've envisioned being their head coaching career looking like?
Right, and that's where some of this is kind of like a cumulative snowball effect from everything that's happened over the last couple of years. Maybe it would be different if Caserio had stepped into a situation that was a little bit more conventional. It hadn't been botched so thoroughly by the people before. So the question becomes, all right, what if it's going to limit our candidate pool, how do we still find the right guy? And I wonder, Sean, if a lot of teams aren't maybe thinking the same way the Texans are right now, regardless of whether they're perceived as a good landing spot or a bad landing spot. There are 8 positions open. It's January 25th.
Nobody's hired anybody.
David Culley was hired as like the last guy last year.
He was the last guy, and it was reported on January the 28th, and he was introduced on Friday the 29th.
Right. So we're 4 days away from when the last guy was hired last year. We're sitting out there with 8 guys not hired. I wonder if maybe one of the things kind of making the rounds around teams last year at the draft and combine and stuff like that might have been, hey, let's reevaluate the way we evaluate coaching candidates. Like, let's reevaluate our evaluations. And that maybe there's a kind of a groupthink thing going on here where they realize, okay, going from the same old pool of guys who ultimately, you know, 75% of them don't work out, maybe there's a better way. And that everybody's kind of, you know, there are more interviews now amongst guys that have only had limited coordinating experience with multiple teams.
Mm-hmm.
What's that mean for the Texans? I guess it might mean that they lose an edge on getting the non-traditional candidate. Like, it might have been that, hey, we're not going to get a traditional candidate that wants to come in here because of all our baggage, so we're going to go and we're going to look under every rock and we're going to find a young up-and-comer who's got all these head coach attributes. The problem is there might be 7 other teams doing the exact same thing right now.
Yep, absolutely. So, yeah, Jonathan Gannon, he reportedly knocked it out of the park with the Texans and with the Vikings. Back to McCown for a second. This is from Josh McCown was on Jay Cutler's podcast a few months back. Landry played this audio yesterday on their show, and I thought it was interesting, and I thought it would be good to introduce here during any McCown segment. They were teammates in Chicago back in the, back about 10 years ago. Here was Josh McCown on exactly where the seeds of his desire to get into coaching were planted back in the day.
I got to Chicago. Chris Ballard was there. He's crushing it. He's the best. And he pulled me aside and he said, hey, man, you ever consider coaching? Rob Marinelli's on that staff. Start saying the same thing. Lovie Smith, start saying the same thing. I start going throughout my career and these different coaches, older guys pouring into me going, you really need to think about getting into this thing. So then these last 4 or 5 years of my career going into these buildings and taking notes and watching and learning and understanding, you know, organizational processes, all of those things and making notes on those things. And there's been some thought put into it. It won't be like, hey, man, let's go talk to your coach today. You know, went through the process with Houston. You know, there was a lot made of it. It wasn't as much of a, you know, an interview, I think, as it was just checking in organizationally on, you know, as an older player, on my opinion of things. We talked about coaching, certainly, and it was a good experience for me, but it just wasn't time right now.
Okay, now that's interesting, that last part there. Now, keep in mind, that interview was from a few months ago, so this is before the Texans, well before the Texans interviewed him this time around for the head coaching job. Does that last part, Seth, where he kind of gives you a window into what exactly the meeting was with the Texans? He said it wasn't really like an interview. It was more them looking for my opinion on things as an older player. Does that change your opinion at all about him getting a, quote, second interview this time around, that maybe this is more of a – maybe the first one was couched as an interview, but it was really more of a conversation than it was grilling him on, why would you be a great guy for us in 2021?
And I guess it's curious just because also, I don't know, didn't the Texans themselves report that they had interviewed Josh McCown?
Yes.
For that coaching position,
yeah.
Right? So, I mean, you can call it whatever he wants.
Right.
It was a head coach interview, at least from the Texans' perspective.
Right.
It doesn't really change anything. Like, my biggest problem is just honestly that he still hasn't been a full-time coach anywhere. That's a big deal. Like, think about anybody listening right now has either worked with or has had to hire somebody who had a great GPA in college. You know, like a lot of people listening have been in that experience, and that you find out real quickly that there's a difference between having potential and actually knowing how to work a job. And there's lots of people that have great GPAs that just aren't good workers or don't work well in their profession, and vice versa. So, yes, does Josh McCown have the potential to be a really good coach? Sure. He's got all those intangibles, undefinables. People love the way he works with younger players. That's great. That's different than being a coach. So that bothers me. Ross called it insulting. I think it's, for me, what I get concerned is that maybe the Texans, after hiring David Culley, and then if they were to actually consider hiring Josh McCown, maybe they underestimate what it actually takes to be a head coach. Because I feel like when they hired David Culley, even if they didn't think he might be the long-term solution, I think they might have actually underestimated how challenging some of the aspects of being a head coach were going to be for David Culley. So at the very least, give me a guy who's worked 18-hour days, who understands the pressure of what it's like, not just as an NFL coach, but even a college coach, or damn, a full-time head high school football coach.
Yep.
That's actually way more pressure than a lot of – here's the problem, Sean. If you're a high school head football coach, I think there's more chance that you want to stay there for a long time and, like, live in that community. Like, you gotta live in a very small, tight-knit group of people that are very critical of you. That's tough.
You actually eat at the same places that the people who are critical of you eat. You know?
Yeah, Bill O'Brien always knew that someday he'd be out of Houston. It makes it a little bit easier than knowing that you're going to be there forever.
We've had a few people point out, like, hey, guys, maybe the 17-game season slowed down the hiring process. Like, there's an extra week now. No, there is an extra week. Here's the thing. It's 15 days since the regular season ended, or 16 days now since the regular season ended. Last year, the regular season ended on January 3rd. Most of the coaches were hired by January 19th. Like, this is still going way, way slower than the normal hiring cycle. Okay? Like,
Robert
crazy
Sala,
for zero jobs to be filled.
Yeah, Robert Saleh was hired on January 14th, for instance.
Okay.
So, you know, by
January,
that's the equivalent of January 22nd for this year.
Yeah.
So, it's just strange that there have been no head coaching hires. It's not like it's just that a few lingerers are taking longer than usual. This is longer by any standard, especially when you include the fact that interviews could have started 2 weeks earlier this year. They kind of did things to make it easier to hire guys earlier, and it's been the exact opposite.
Yeah, Jacksonville not having a coach is wild to me because they're the one team that was able to interview candidates with 2 weeks left in the regular season. So that's kind of crazy to me. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Sticking with the head coaching stuff, are the Texans going to land an A-lister and the most important head coach vacancy for Houston Texan fans other than the Texans has some serious traction? We'll tell you what it is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne with you. All right, 8 openings in the NFL right now for head coaching positions. And let's do some level setting here on these 8 head coaching openings. Seth, my contention is that the most important head coaching vacancy for Texan fans, other than obviously the Texans, it is not Jacksonville, although that is one that is important because if they get the right guy to get Trevor Lawrence pointed in the right direction, that'll be a problem for many, many years. It's not Miami because of whatever effect that might have on the Deshaun Watson trades. To me, it's the New York Giants because that is the team that I want them to trade Deshaun Watson to. And here is the good news, although there were reports yesterday that Brian Flores and Deshaun Watson don't really have this great relationship that everybody or the people had thought they had, whatever the case may be. Anyways, here's the latest with the Giants head coaching position. Brian Daboll gets his in-person interview today. He's the offensive coordinator for the Bills. He's the one that is he's the architect of this offense that has turned Josh Allen into a megastar. Brian Flores is going to get an in-person interview with the Giants on Thursday. Their defensive coordinator, Patrick Graham, the Giants' defensive coordinator, who has ties to the Patriots tree, by the way, he's going to get his interview on Wednesday. So if you're watching that Giants job, and again, the reason why I'm watching it so closely, Seth, 5th overall pick, 7th overall pick. I want that to be a Deshaun Watson-friendly environment in New York with the Giants. And Brian Daboll would seem, at least schematically, to be a guy, based on his success with Josh Allen, that might be looking for somebody like a Deshaun Watson, as opposed to, say, a Daniel Jones to run his offense.
I've seen some people maybe make the argument that the Mara family wouldn't be likely to like Deshaun Watson and all the baggage that comes with him because they're an old guard NFL franchise. You know, they've been in the Mara family forever. And I guess my answer to that is simply this: Lawrence Taylor. Like, okay, great. Like, Lawrence Taylor came
that
with
is a,
much
that
baggage.
Is a great checkmate by you right
yes,
there.
Yes, anybody, right? And it continued to actually probably had more baggage after his career than before, but is still just royalty in New York. It's not like the Giants fan base hasn't had to make kind of a compromise at times between whatever level of scrutiny you want to apply to Deshaun Watson. Lawrence Taylor's had some issues. So I don't think that's going to be a barrier. I think the Giants are getting kind of desperate for a team that's just really botched its last few coaching hires, and they just they want to have some success, and Deshaun would be a pretty clear avenue to that.
He definitely would. Yeah, right. Like getting Deshaun Watson should guarantee you that your next head coach is going to be somebody that you want for more than 2 years. Because especially in that division, you're going to be pretty successful. Washington's not a great football team. Philadelphia made the playoffs. They're not a great football team. Who knows? Dallas might be firing their coach here in the next week or two if this Sean Payton thing were to start to pick up any sort of steam. I feel like Daboll has to be the chalk there just based on the relationship with Joe Shane, the new general manager in New York. Mm-hmm. You know, they were both in Buffalo together. But I Brian Flores is one who I think he's from New York City. He's from Brooklyn, I think. So those would seem to me to be the two front runners. I don't know. I'm trying to see if I feel strongly about any particular candidates on any of these other openings right now. You know, Matt Eberflus is a finalist in Jacksonville, although Byron Leftwich is getting a second interview there. Seth, you played in Jacksonville. Byron Leftwich just seems super logical there.
Well, the Jaguars' job is, I think, a better one than people might think. If only just because Shad Khan, the owner, has been very willing to spend on the team, despite all these persistent rumors that he wanted to move the team to London and what have you. They've pumped a whole lot of money into that, not just the stadium, but the actual facilities themselves. And I think he wants to give people the resources to win. He's just made some curious hires. The problem is Trent Baalke. I think the question is that Trent Baalke, the general manager, has very bad word of mouth. So it might be kind of like in Houston for different reasons or whatever. Like it's perceived as a bad spot. Brian Leftwich might make – Byron, excuse me. My brother-in-law's name is Brian Leftwich.
Really?
Mess this up a lot. Yeah, but he also – when I used to live in Jacksonville and my sister would come to visit, those guys got great dinner reservations by him very honestly saying Brian Leftwich. And we'd never have a problem getting onto a golf course or into a restaurant. So –
I would hope that Seth Payne would be able to get you onto a golf course or restaurant.
This
too.
Was after long after I was done playing,
okay,
and I was still, you know, and I hadn't played in Jacksonville since 2001.
I got you.
So it's different than the franchise quarterback.
True.
So anyway, Byron Leftwich. It might be that it's the best place for him, even though it's a little bit not ideal because of the general manager. They might be the team that's most willing to commit to him.
I mean, theoretically, you look at all these jobs, Seth: Chicago, Denver, Houston, Jacksonville, Las Vegas, Miami, Minnesota, and the Giants. If you're taking all the assets that these teams collectively have, these eight teams, and you're stack ranking them, you're doing a big board of assets that these eight teams have collectively, is not the number one thing on the board Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Jacksonville's a good job from that, just purely from that standpoint.
But I wonder, it'd be really interesting to sit down with an offensive NFL coach that's been around a long time and ask, okay, what might other rookie quarterbacks have done, regardless of whether, you know, they had Urban Meyer as a head coach or not? Because It's not like there were a bunch of rank amateurs out there. They had experienced NFL offensive coaches on that staff, and yet Trevor Lawrence, in a lot of respects, was the most disappointing person in this draft class.
Yes.
You know, hey, Peyton Manning went to a bad team. They won 2-3 games his rookie year. Yep. He set a record for interceptions, and yet he still showed a lot more promise on a bad football team than Trevor Lawrence did this year. I'm curious just how much slack people are going to give Trevor Lawrence based on the situation.
Boy, it's, when we position it that way, because I'm looking at the list of jobs, and obviously my concern is as a Texan fan, like, okay, how is the Texans' job viewed around the league, especially when they're in on candidates who seem to be picking up some buzz? Brian Flores was the first guy they interviewed. Well, he's about to interview with the Giants, and he's interviewed already with the Bears. Jonathan Gannon is somebody that there have been reports of people in the building see him as a front runner for the job. Well, the Vikings really like him too. He interviewed in Denver. He's not one of their three reported finalists, so I guess that's good. But Seth, I'm looking at these jobs and I'm going, okay, what if you were trying to sell these eight jobs to some, you're trying to pitch them, you're trying to pitch these eight jobs, and there's the one big thing for each of these jobs. Like in Jacksonville, obviously it's Trevor Lawrence. In Chicago, it's probably Justin Fields. With the Giants, it's probably the fifth and seventh overall pick. What is it if you're the Texans?
Oh, if you're the okay. If you looked at the Vikings.
Yeah.
Okay, the Vikings, I think ownership has been very patient. So I think you could, ironically enough, despite the fact that Cal McNair has fired GMs and head coaches in pretty rapid succession, I think there's still a track record of if they have their plan in place now, that this coaching hire, you could make an argument they should expect to give this guy a lot of time to figure it out. That's a harder sell than I'm thinking. That's just my personal opinion on it. So I think the other thing that the Vikings have going for them is that they're probably the most playoff ready. You know, Kirk Cousins can get you to the playoff. The rest of the roster can get you to the playoff. So I don't think, the Texans can't compete on any of those levels.
Right. So, so let's go through these. Like, let's go down the list.
Okay, the Jaguars. You said it yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, the biggest strength you have there is Trevor Lawrence and a few of the potential splash players that they have on the roster already. I think that may be above and beyond the Texans.
Yeah.
But it's not a good roster. They have the quarterback. So the poor man's version of that is, hey, look at Davis Mills and what he did. Let's really sell on what he did on the mental side of the game.
Yep.
And he can make all the throws. He's got a good enough arm. It's not an electric arm or anything, but he can make all these throws. The thing that's really different from him compared to all these other quarterbacks is that he outperformed all these first-round picks, many of whom had better offensive talent around them. Davis Mills outperformed those guys, especially in the stretch, down the stretch. I think that's an argument, especially for maybe a guy that wants to prove that he can do it with a guy like Davis Mills, or at least you challenge him on that front.
Okay, so what about Chicago then? Because Flores is up for Chicago, and he's up for the Texans' job. What is the big selling point in Chicago? Is it Justin Fields?
I guess it's got to be Justin Fields.
Right?
Yeah, and then that's where you'd have to say, hey, Justin Fields has incredible physical talent. But boy, he holds onto the ball forever. And other quarterbacks who have done that, held onto the ball forever, like Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson. Okay. Do you think Justin Fields has it in him to be a Russell Wilson or an Andrew Luck?
Yep.
That he can figure it out and, you know, refine that down to being more of an NFL style quarterback. And I'm guessing that a few of the candidates are skeptical of that compared to like Davis Mills. Obviously doesn't have the same physical skills, but he's shown more of a willingness to adapt to the NFL than Justin Fields has. So
what
far.
About Denver? You know, Kevin O'Connell is one of their finalists. The Texans, at least if we're reading the rumor mill, they're still trying to get an interview with Kevin O'Connell. He's already a finalist for the Denver job. What's the selling point in Denver?
Is it the selling point in Denver or the selling point in Texans that they're better than the
Well, either one. I mean, let's identify the selling point of Denver, and then how do you countersell against that, I guess?
I guess the one of the biggest selling points in Denver is that you've got a defense that, especially with a little bit of tweaking and improvement, can really help a younger quarterback.
It's a good roster.
Might be. Yeah. They've probably got the most, other than the Vikings, maybe like if you separate the quarterback position from it, maybe they're the most playoff ready with just a quarterback.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to sell Aaron Rodgers on coming there, I think that's an easy sell.
Yeah.
If you're trying to sell the NFL head coach, he might be saying, okay, but can you guarantee me that Aaron Rodgers is going to be here?
Right.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. The thing that Denver doesn't have going for it is that there's very little stability at ownership right now. They've been in the middle of a multi-year fight over exactly who's going to control the Denver Broncos. And I think as a coach, you got to be nervous about that. I think the Texans could actually use that as a selling point. And again, despite the fact that Cal McNair has fired a few guys in rapid succession, he's spent a lot of money, a lot of it errantly a couple of years ago, but he's shown a willingness to spend on the roster, and I don't think Cal McNair is likely going anywhere anytime soon.
Okay, Chicago, Jacksonville, Minnesota, Denver, we did. The other thing I would say to Denver, Seth, is the other thing I would say to somebody who's weighing Denver and the Texans, like, okay, have fun dealing with Mahomes and Herbert for the next 12 years.
Oh, yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, No, that's a really good point. And that's something that, yeah, Rodgers has to think about.
Yeah.
Is like, okay, where am I going? Like, for the NFC North, where, come on, let's get real. Or out to the NFC West or the AFC West. It's a whole different set of challenges.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Las Vegas. What about Las Vegas? Las Vegas, who interviewed Gerard Mayo, who we all think is somebody that Jack Easterby and Nick Caserio like, but they've not requested to interview him. What's the big selling point of Vegas? And if you're the Texans, how do you countersell against that?
So if you're a coach
looking
for Vegas, do you actually like Derek Carr? I guess that's the biggest question.
Right.
And a lot of the improvement he's made over the last couple years.
Yeah.
And then you got to ask the owner, do you like David Carr?
Yeah.
Or Derek Carr? I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not convinced that Mark Davis actually likes Derek Carr.
My selling point against Vegas would actually be something that would be a it would be a selling point that actually would make me want to live in Vegas. But a selling point for a head coach is, do you feel like trying to make sure your guys are staying home at night in Vegas? You see all the stuff we've gone through here in Vegas with this team since we moved here.
And maybe John Gruden, in a lot of ways, might have been the worst guy for that team, because John Gruden, and now at the time when he was hired, they hadn't even made the decision to go to Vegas, had they, when they hired John
No,
Gruden?
I think they had, because that was a big
had
reason they got him was of going to Vegas. Yeah.
John Gruden he seemed to be on the more permissive side of the character scale when it comes to drafting guys.
Yeah.
And then Mayock, I mean, it was never really clear who was Mayock's choice and who was not, but I think you could actually turn that into a positive to a coaching candidate, Sean. I think you could say, look, Gruden didn't care enough about like thinking about which guys can handle playing in Las Vegas and which guys can't. Mm-hmm. And Mike Mayock either wasn't strong-willed enough or didn't have the power to make good decisions. I mean, they overdrafted routinely. In any given year, when somebody gets drafted high and all the draft nicks and everything say that was too high, I take that with a grain of salt, because you never know, you know, like how guys actually are on various draft boards. But the Raiders routinely drafted guys way above where the consensus was that they should go. So they still competed despite all that. And so I'm telling the new coach coming in with potentially a new GM that, like, okay, we're going to do those things different. Look, you already had a playoff-caliber team against all odds. Think about what you could do. And think about, honestly, I think you could attract the right kind of player that would be attracted to Vegas, that maybe has a little bit of a lust for life but knows how to control it.
Right.
Vegas would be a fun place to go. I say even for family people. Like, I would go to Vegas just because of the awesome restaurants and the fun entertainment.
No,
like I don't like gambling, and I don't like going to clubs, but I like going to, like, shows and concerts and all that stuff.
They're the one team out of these eight that can say, we played in the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's really simple. Last one, and you touched on it quickly before I shifted over to Vegas, the Giants. What is the big selling point? Brian Flores might be up for the Giants and the Texans job. What's the big selling point for the Giants, and how do you countersell that if you're the Texans? Is it the 5th and 7th overall pick? Is that the big selling point? Like, we're going
to
get
Saquon Barkley. I'm trying to think they're
kind of a mess.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously.
They let Dave Gettleman run roughshod over it like he was managing a 1985 NFL team.
They are over the cap with a rookie, with a quarterback on a rookie contract. You know how hard that is to do?
Man, they're a rough sell right now.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I think it's kind of like the Cowboys in some respects. I think sometimes people outside of the city of Dallas or New York, sometimes people in those cities overestimate just how much the appeal of those places is. Like, yeah, there's an appeal, but it's not enough to make people overlook a lot of the blemishes. So I don't know what the selling point is.
Do you think the Giants are going, we may make a run at Deshaun Watson? Like, is that, would you?
That's like one of their selling points?
Yeah, like, man, you know what? We're going to do everything we can to get a franchise quarterback in here. You know, maybe without saying Deshaun Watson, but look.
Or maybe, what if this guy loves Mike Glennon? Maybe Mike Glennon's the guy.
Mike Glennon's the worst quarterback in the history of the NFL.
Tell that to the various GMs who have given him over $10
million
a year.
This just in, there are horrible GMs in the NFL. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. That was fun going through that. That was a very clarifying segment there.
No, You know what, though, Sean? I think maybe a little bit of it going through that gives me a little bit of a window into why maybe some of these positions haven't been filled yet. Yeah. I don't know how many offers have actually been made. But, man, these teams, like, losing teams usually have blemishes, but it seems like there's a an uncharacteristically large number of, like, actual, like, dysfunctional issues.
Yes.
Like, man, something ain't right.
A lot
something
of blemishes.
Stinks around
a lot
here.
Of acne.
Yeah.
A lot
this
of pimples.
This isn't just we had a rough few years. Yep. This is like, wow, you guys are a train wreck.
What are people around the league buzzing most about still on the heels of that classic game between the Bills and the Chiefs? We will tell you next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.